Well, the travel ban, some have said that the real target of the ban isn't citizens of these six countries, it's Muslims in particular. Let's talk to Raheel Raza. She's with ClarionProject.org, and she's the president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. Raheel, great to have you on WILS.
Thank you for having me.
And you are based in Canada, right?
Yes, I live in Toronto.
In Toronto. And how did you end up in Canada versus the U.S.?
Well, I came here 30 years ago on a visit, and I fell in love with the country and the people and decided this is where I want to bring up my children and call it home. And it's been a love affair ever since.
Hmm. Does Canada treat Muslim immigrants differently than the U.S. does in your view?
Well, there's actually no such thing as how Canada treats or U.S. treats. I think it is a relationship that is built on experience, on trust. The Muslims, there are, you know, about over a million Muslims in Canada. Many of them are very successful, but there are also cells of radicalized individuals, just like you have in America. So the situation is not very different in that sense. But about 5 years ago, when there was a terror attack, I had called for a temporary ban, a temporary stoppage of people coming in from countries that promote and fund terrorism, very similar to what President Trump has called for.
This travel ban. And the travel ban itself, do you support the idea of the ban?
Definitely. I supported it from the beginning because, first of all, you know, it's not correct to call it a ban. It's a temporary moratorium. And the countries that are listed on in the U.S. are mostly failed states, except for Iran, which, as you know, has been at a perpetual war against the United States. But the other five countries, they are failed states. They are highly unpredictable, the population there. There's a lot of internal trauma and radicalization and, you know, jihadism going on there. So in the interest of national safety and security, it's not a bad idea to point this out.
Raheel Raza with us on WILS. She's the president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the ban because a part of the issue here in Michigan is we're right on the border with Canada, and that attack just last week, right in Bishop Airport here in Flint, where a policeman was stabbed, and it was a Canadian man yelling Allah Akbar as he was stabbing the policeman. I guess I'm curious because we had a security expert on. He said Canada really it doesn't vet the way we do. They actually need to be more effective in doing so. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, yes. I think that Canada is considered to be a bit of a safe haven for people who are radicalized, and of course, because of the porous borders and going back and forth, this is not the first time. Since 9/11, our security agencies and your security agencies have been quite cognizant of the fact that there are Canadians who can slip across the border, and there have been cases. So Canada tends to be very soft and gentle and nice, but we are living in times where it's not practical.
Now, when you say soft and gentle and nice, is Canada open to citizens from these six countries, for example?
Yes, it is. Yes, okay. Canada is open to citizens from many places. Canada has taken thousands of refugees, and you know, one has to be practical in terms of national security. Now, the fact that the Supreme Court has finally said that you know, this process can go ahead, it's something that we should look at as a step in the right direction to tighten the safety and security of our borders and the countries we call home, because that is what it's all about. It's not about religion. It's about a region, and we must remember that. I'm a practicing observant Muslim. I don't get my back up and think of this as a Muslim ban. I think of this as a long-term security measure, which will benefit me and my children and my grandchildren, who also happen to be Muslim.
Right. So if you're a jihadi, would you just then try to get into Canada and make your way into the U.S. that way? Is that the way you'd approach it?
They are, yes, yes. There are, I mean, you see, the jihadis, the people who have been radicalized, the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and their ilk, they will find any way to get in anywhere. They will come in, you know, they will manipulate situations like a refugee crisis and come in on the backs of refugees. They will find illegal ways to get in. They will find legal ways to get in because this is about an ideology.
Right.
It is a mindset. And they bring their ideology with them, whether it's to Canada or to America. because they have declared a war on the West.
Rahil Raza, WILS. Rahil, one of the things that opponents of the ban have been saying is that most of the attacks aren't from new immigrants. They're actually people that have been in the U.S. for, you know, a decade even, and they've become radicalized while they've been here. What do you make of that argument that it's really in effect?
Well, that is only part of the problem. They're not looking at the larger ideology. The larger ideology emanates from the Salafi Wahhabi situation, which is exported through billions of petrodollars from Saudi Arabia, Qatar. Some of these countries are now on notice to take care of their inner issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, none of these attacks that we have seen in the past year have been isolated. They're all connected dots. They're all based on the same ideology, whether that person was born and brought up in the West or whether they were trained and born and brought up in another part of the world. Mm-hmm. So if we know of certain countries which are a hotbed of jihadi radicalization, like the five countries mentioned on this moratorium list, then it is better to be prepared. It is a precaution that one takes.
Right. And you said, Rahil, that it's this larger philosophy that comes out of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. What's the benefit to these countries? Why do they so actively promote this kind of radical thinking?
Well, it is a war of ideologies. I wish it was a philosophy. It's more of a cult. It's an ideology that is about power and domination over the world and over other Muslims as well. So, you know, you must remember that Muslims have been more the target of radicals and jihadists than non-Muslims. Mm-hmm. They will kill anyone who doesn't follow the same way of thinking as them. These are people who believe that they are the only ones who know what is the right way to practice the faith, and they have also believe in some mutated version of their understanding of Islam, that they must kill anyone who is not following the same path. Yeah. And so they justify it through their own mutated understanding of the faith. And this is why we call it an ideology, because the work that we as reformist Muslims do, the work that the Carrion Project does to expose the radical jihadists and give voice to reformist Muslims, is to have an alternate narrative. Mm-hmm. We are at the beginning of our reform, just like the Christian reform took 500 years. Mm-hmm. In a process.
Yeah, so in terms of security, it sounds like you're talking about something that's going to take hundreds of years to get a handle on. What's the best way to figure out or target people that are seriously dangerous to us and either, you know, get rid of them or kill them?
Well, the thing is that the security agencies, civil society, governments have to look at where this ideology is emanating from. If it is emanating from places of worship or organizations and institutions, then they have to, they have to cut off that oxygen that fuels this ideology, because nobody is born a terrorist.
What is that oxygen, though? What is that?
That oxygen is this radical ideology that says that they must have control and hegemony, that they're at war with the West and our values. Mm-hmm. And this is not something that's unknown to security experts and to, the law enforcement agencies. Okay. When you look at the attack that happened in London, England, eventually law enforcement said that they were aware
do you think criminalizing the philosophy itself would work?
It's difficult to criminalize the philosophy, but definitely stronger steps need to be taken. We have never had a round table where people can sit down, Muslims, non-Muslims, law enforcement, security services, and plan a strategy. You remember when there was communism, fascism, Marxism, globally the world stood up against it. Now this philosophy is called Islamism.
Okay.
Which is very similar
now,
to fascism.
Could you make it illegal, though, to visit radical websites to propagate radical material? Would that potentially...
Something that needs to be discussed. Yes, it should be. The internet is a very strong factor that plays into this. You know, but much more important than that is that there are physical people who are promoting this message of hate and violence and intolerance towards others, which eventually leads to the violence. We know about it. Security knows about it. Law enforcement knows about it. But political correctness does not allow them to stop these people or to ask them questions.
So how would you stop them? You'd either have to deport them, right? Or, I don't know, what, or jail them?
Well, there are ways. I mean, when someone is at war with you, there's a War Measures Act in which you can detain people. Right. Question them. Shut down institutions and organizations where these messaging is coming
from. When you see countries like Egypt, right, they essentially jailed Muslim Brotherhood people, right? Now, did that approach help in their country?
Yes, to some extent it did. They are much more aware and they're speaking out. So the Muslim Brotherhood has a very strong presence in the United States, and we know about this. And if I know about it, I'm sure security agencies know about this as well. But it's subtle. It's insidious. The freedoms that these countries afford people who live here are the very freedoms mm-hmm. that are used by the radicals and the jihadists to promote their own message.
So organizations in any way tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, should they be viewed essentially as enemies to the U.S.?
Yes, they should. Okay. Absolutely.
Because an organization like CARE, right, is that not tied to, okay, should that not be allowed to exist?
CARE, uh-huh. by the way, has been labeled a terrorist organization, not by a Western country, but by the United Arab Emirates, which is a Muslim country, and on their list of groups, CARE is also mentioned. Hmm. They are unindicted co-conspirators in the Texas terrorism trials. So there definitely needs to be better accountability. There needs to be some acknowledgement that the problem emanates from within these institutions and organizations. And instead of promoting loyalty to the land in which we live and which we call home, they promote divisiveness.
Mm-hmm. Raheel Raza, she's with the Clarion Project, and she's the president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. It's Raheel Raza right here on 1320 WILS. Thank you, Raheel.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.